We realize that most listeners have probably never heard of corporate personhood before, and that this is a lot of strangeness to digest in one sitting. But we hope that a serious minority of you are starting to grasp the clear and present danger this lunacy presents to our country and our lives. The residents of the small town of Point Arena, California, began to sense the madness nearly 2 years ago, and became the first community ever to strike out against it. When our counter-coup is won and the post-corporate historians look back at our times, Point Arena will likely be viewed in the same bright light as Lexington, another defiant village that fired a shot heard round the world. We spoke to one of their people's militia recently over a rather primitive phone line. A, we said we'd take you to the frontiers of democracy. We didn't promise first class.
We're talking with Jan Edwards, who helped spearhead one of the first movements in America, and perhaps the world, against the concept of corporate personhood. Tell us why it has so riled the residents of Point Arena.
Corporate personhood, the way that we explain it, is when corporations have rights in the Constitution that are usually reserved for human-like Bill of Rights, 14th Amendment, like civil rights legislation. Corporations having these rights has really heavily affected our ability to run our democracy and to rule over corporations. Basically, the Constitution says that people rule. And if corporations are to be considered people, then corporations rule. What they're ruling over, according to the Constitution, is the government. So now we have corporations ruling over the government. It wasn't always so, but that's the situation now. And it's affecting our lives in many ways. For example, it is the reason that corporations can give unlimited money to campaigns, because they're people. And courts have said that money is speech, and you can't limit the free speech of a person. And since corporations are persons and money is speech, then corporations can give money for political reasons.
So why Point Arena? What got this started there?
We were a small Alliance for Democracy chapter. When we started looking at campaign finance reform, I think it was 1999, and we were also beginning to get worried about the things with the World Trade Organization. That was the year of the Seattle marches. But the more that we looked at campaign finance reform, and the more that we looked at the way that corporations were ruling things, we realized that the reason that we couldn't take away this right of corporations to give money into our political process was because they were considered persons under the Constitution by the Supreme Court. It wasn't by changing the Constitution. They just interpreted the word person in the 14th Amendment to mean corporation as well as person. We began to feel that that was really the core of the issue. If we didn't get at that core, we were not going to be able to change things. We began to look at how, in a small town, one would begin this battle, and we wrote a resolution, and we presented it to the city council of Point Arena. The resolution didn't have any binding effect, and it isn't law. We still had to make our case to the community. There were incredible letter fights, and we had a lot of disagreement in the community and explaining to do, but at the end of the day, our city council voted 4-1 to pass this resolution, that they did not agree with this Supreme Court decision of 100 years ago. The people who seemed to understand it instinctively were just the average person who hadn't put a lot of study into these things. Also, we did have a lot of lawyers who jumped on board and said, yes, this has been a problem for some time. You know, you might think it would be a right-left issue, but it really wasn't. People who were invested in thinking of corporations as persons for whatever reason, they had trouble thinking of this. And also, people who didn't take the time to think it through and who jumped to the conclusion that we were talking about something else, like limited liability, which is not a personhood right. It's like a charter privilege. Other people thought we were talking about corporate right to sue and be sued. We had to spend a lot of time sorting out what the confusions were, and it was a new idea for folks. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom is a group that has taken on an abolished corporate personhood campaign, and so we've been thinking of ways to say it almost, you know, in a T-shirt or bumper sticker way. And we take our inspiration from the abolitionists. We don't believe this corporate personhood wrong is something that can be modified or regulated, just like the abolitionists did not believe slavery could be modified or regulated. It had to be done away with completely because it was completely wrong thinking. That is the way we're approaching this issue. The slave owners were not asked by the abolitionists to create a voluntary code of conduct. We didn't set up a regulatory agency for slavery. Abolitionists just went ahead and said, no, whole thing's got to go. Whole thing has got to be redefined. The slave that was defined as property was now, by the 14th Amendment after the Civil War, defined as a person. So we have a little phrase that we have on our T-shirts that says, slavery is the legal fiction that a person is property. Corporate personhood is the legal fiction that property is a person. Sometimes we just talk about that a little bit with people because they can understand that slavery is a legal fiction. And it's the same way with corporate personhood. It's not real in the way that gravity is real. Slavery was very real to the slaves, don't get me wrong, but it was only real because the law said it was real. And the same thing is true about corporate personhood. Corporate personhood only exists because the Supreme Court has said it did, not because it has any real validity in nature.
Supposing corporate personhood was revoked across the land, how would American society change?
Well, the day after slaves were freed, what had happened was that there was a power shift. Now things were possible that hadn't been possible before. They could begin to express themselves in new ways. That is kind of what would happen if we abolished corporate personhood. We would still have a lot of work to do, but a huge barrier would have been removed from our way to do these things, we would have a power shift. The people would once again be in control of the government, and corporations would be subservient to the people, which is how they started out. If you wanted some actual examples of what might be vulnerable to change if we abolished corporate personhood, I think one place to start looking would be that we could prohibit all political activity by corporations, all political donations, and all corporate lobbying. They are currently legal because corporate persons are protected under the First Amendment, and this is called free speech. The Fourth Amendment is another issue, this Arthur Anderson stuff. A lot of this stuff of not being allowed to look at the books, that has to do with the Fourth Amendment right of corporations to be protected from search and seizure without a warrant. Removing that Fourth Amendment would also help the EPA and OSHA come in for inspections whenever they wanted. They wouldn't have to set up a schedule or get a warrant. Those would be some of the areas I would go into. Also, the Takings Clause is a part of the Fifth Amendment, which, of course, is part of our Bill of Rights, which says that the government cannot take property from a person without just compensation. The corporations have used this for about 100 years now to either overturn regulation that is passed by the states or to make everybody pay a lot of money to protect the environment and the workers. Everything is a takings now, and that's kind of what we're looking at NAFTA. NAFTA is sort of an extension of the Fifth Amendment Takings Clause, which corporations only have because they're persons. Many, many problems with corporations stem back to this personhood decision.
This is indeed revolutionary. I mean, it's one of the first movements that's addressing the fundamental powers of corporations rather than their specific activities.
Yes, we're looking at what they are, not what they do. What we've been doing with the Women's International League is traveling around and talking with folks about this. We have 3 short-term goals: to get more towns and cities to adopt resolutions similar to the one that we did in Point Arena. The second goal is to change the ACLU's position on this issue. They are siding with the Supreme Court with corporations being persons. And our third goal is to insert this issue into the upcoming election. To that end, we've got some things on the ground. One is that we expect the city of San Francisco to be looking at trying to pass such a resolution very soon. The citizens are beginning to support this. We have a supervisor who has signed up, and he's going to be writing a resolution and presenting it, we hope, to San Francisco City Board of Supervisors. That would be a very big city compared to Point Arena to have passed such a thing. There's things happening also in Pennsylvania and in Arizona, and I think in Maine too, right?
There is a ferment, yes.
Power to the person.